You're listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser-Ilkovich. And today I'm here with Tess Quinlan, a content planning lead for direct-to-consumer at the NBA, and also a New York Women in Communications scholarship winner. And we are just so thrilled to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about you and your career and all things New York Wiki.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Julie. I really appreciate it.
We're going to start this episode with the same question we always ask. What do you think is the biggest challenge facing women in the workplace today?
I think it's a twofold issue. I would say the first piece is finding the line of advocating for yourself and how to embrace that mentality. I think a lot of women struggle with that because they don't want to come across as too brash or too abrasive, but it's a really important component of making sure that your career continues to develop as you keep going. And then the other piece, I would say, kind of separately out of that, at least I've seen in the with the pandemic, and I know that it's a little bit further away from the start of that, but I think a lot of women have struggled with the work-life balance, and that has kind of reprioritized in a lot of people's experience, I would also mention. So how do you find your work-life balance while also ensuring that, you know, you're fulfilling all your obligations at work and you're advocating for yourself in an appropriate way, but then also, you know, if you have a family or if you have a partner or have a life outside of that, I think the pandemic really put that in perspective for a lot of people. So those are the two elements I'd say specifically, especially in this modern day technological piece, I think that are really important for women that are navigating in their workplace.
Absolutely. Those are both such good points. And it's interesting as we talk about this, I like to start because I feel like we see trends emerge. I mean, you know, there's unlimited issues and challenges, I'm sure, but there are certain ones that we're kind of trying to tackle, and both of those are the biggies. And I mean, like you said, I think with the changes with the pandemic and even like work from home and hybrid work, whether you love it or hate it or however you feel about it, it really has created a whole new set of challenges that we are still navigating.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, even in sports, like sports happen on nights and weekends. So there's many a time when, which is part of the job, that's what this is. You know, it's, I'm flying on Mother's Day to go to the combine. Like that's a real thing that I'm dealing with. Or how do I say it to somebody? And my coworkers are great about this, by the way, but saying, hey, I'm going to a bridal shower tomorrow, so I'm going to be out of pocket. And the nice part about our team is that they jump in and go, nope, I got you. Go experience that work, go experience that life moment. I can take on your work for that amount of time, which is really nice. I would also add that that's a really nice part about the NBA is that everyone's a teammate. And so they embrace that sort of, how can we help you cultivate that a little bit better too?
That's fabulous. I love that so much. And yeah, we often on this podcast, we talk, obviously it's a huge challenge, so about balance all the time, but we've kind of like just started calling it balance because it's like, oh my gosh,
yeah,
not work-life balance. We have been very excited about having the opportunity to talk to you because we really wanted to talk to a woman in this field because I think there are so many unique challenges and situations and experiences that you're having that are very different to other women working in communications or even working kind of like in the similar world or role, but just in different industries. So I think hearing about your balance and how you make it work when you and your colleagues have demands that are just different in terms of timing and travel and frequency of games. I know we've talked earlier, like there's a lot of basketball games and a lot of stuff going on. So how do you balance it? So we're just very excited to have you and hear your advice on all this.
Well, thank you for having me, first of all. I'm ecstatic to be here. When I was 18, I did not think that this would happen. So this is very, very, very cool. But I would say, you know, right off the bat, we're recording this right now during the first round of the playoffs. So there's a lot going on. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of series. But for those of you who don't know, our season predominantly runs from mid-October. And when I say our, I mean the NBA specifically. The W has a different schedule. We run from mid-October all the way through like end of, we're starting to see in like end of June kind of timeline now with us shifting our draft back a little bit. So it's a long stint, and you know, some holidays are very big days for us. Christmas is a very big day for us from a game perspective. We have the in-season tournament now called the NBA, the Emirates NBA Cup. That'll be happening in that happens in December. Our All-Star break is in February. So there's a lot of moving pieces. I mean, my partner and I joke that we haven't spent Valentine's Day together in several years just because of how the timing works. And that is okay. And we both embrace that. But it's one of those things that until you work in this space, you don't necessarily think about it that often. My college roommate is a reporter for ESPN. She covers the Los Angeles Rams. Her name is Sarah Barshop, and she has two young girls, and their birthdays are in the middle of the season. And one of the things that we talk about is, how do you find that, like, okay, we're going to celebrate your birthday on a Tuesday because mom has to travel on Wednesday. Like, we're just going to do that sort of thing. And it's been really nice to have people that understand that in your space, because you don't have to explain to them, oh, sorry, I can't come in to your birthday party. Why? Well, it's during the NBA finals. Like, I'm not going to be here. They kind of just know. And it's really nice and helpful, because just having people that get it, and whether you're in sports or you're an engineer or you're a lawyer or you're an accountant, is, I think, is a fantastic example. Like, tax season is hard, and you need people that understand that tax season is hard. Or even in comms, you know, if you're in advertising and you need to get stuff done before the end of Q4, that sort of, people that understand that, you want to keep in your circle, which is huge.
Absolutely. And I remember Hoda Kotb, who is a former Matrix Award winner and was on this podcast. I had the honor and opportunity to talk to her, and she talked about something similar. Obviously, her schedule is like totally crazy, and you know, the mornings. And one thing she said, and it's really reminding me what you're talking about, like, that resonated with me, is she makes sure that her loved ones know that she loves her job. So it's not, especially her daughters, so it's not just like, oh, I gotta work this weekend. And then it's like, well, why do you have to be away from us? But if you love it, right, then that's also an important element to be like, oh, okay, she loves what she's doing, and so she's not making time for something that, like, she doesn't like instead of hanging out with me.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, especially as you talk about people that interact with younger generations, that you can be passionate about what you do and that you can want to go and do all these things and still manage to care for them and show it in a different way. I'm the oldest of six grandchildren on one side. And one of the things that my cousins and I talk about often is, they had said to me when I was younger, like, you would go after stuff and you pushed us to be better. And your desire and your ambition and your passion inspired us to want to do that, which is an incredible compliment. And I was actually kind of stunned at it. But that experience, I think, has also shaped how I talk about what I do on a daily basis with people. You know, work is work. There are many positives to work, and there are very, very many negatives to work. And it doesn't matter if you're in PR or magazine or journalism or what I do on the content side of things. Those are all facts. But you got to kind of highlight the good stuff to people. I think that's really crucial.
I love that. I want to hear about your own journey. So your career journey, but I invite you to start as far back as you think is appropriate in terms of, you know, maybe even when you fell in love with sports, but then also what you did in terms of school and internships and jobs. I want our audience to hear how you got where you are today.
The first thing to know is that I grew up in New Jersey. I grew up in Montclair, so just outside of the city. And I grew up in sports. My dad worked in college athletics for a very long time. And my mom was a nurse practitioner in pediatric oncology for more than 40 years. So the sports perspective was kept very much in check by the fact that my mother was treating children with cancer every day. So it was something, I'd grown up in gyms all across the country. And it's something I've never really been able to escape in a good way. So I to people who have parents or children who work in sports, I always say this: if you're a child that grew up in this, you either run right toward it or immediately away from it. There's no in between. There's no like, oh, I'll work in it a little bit. It's like, you're either in or you're like, I never want to look at a basketball again. It's one of the two. So I was looking at schools and I originally wanted to be on air and wanted to do on-air sports broadcasting. That was my passion. It's what I really was game for. And went to Marquette University in Milwaukee, where I studied broadcast communication with a double minor in business and writing intensive English. And that was a really fun combination for all my professors who were like, you write too long or you write too short, depending on which class I was taking. So it was an entertaining time. But one of the things that was really instrumental for me to get to Marquette, I was very fortunate, but I did have some financial responsibility to pay for my college tuition. So I looked at a lot of scholarships, and New York Wiki was one of the scholarships that I applied for heading into Marquette. And then also received, I believe, my junior year as well, which was really exciting because it validated that I could pursue a career in this and that my skills were noticed by people that were already in the industry, which was huge for my confidence as an 18-year-old flying 800 miles away to go to school. So I always say this, especially in communications, I graduated without a job because I think a lot of students are like, oh, I need to have a job right when I graduate. Didn't have one. Ended up getting a job at USA Today, where the position of like digital producer was still kind of newfangled, is what I would say, and worked on their college basketball and football coverage for about a year and a half. During that time, they also wanted to get into podcasting because this little podcast, Julie, I don't know if you've heard of it, called Serial, became a thing. And so they wanted to get into podcasting.
Like dabbling in podcasting because,
Yeah, they were like, we should probably have a podcast or two. Like, we could do Serial. Yeah, might be a thing. So I got involved in that because I was a broadcast major and I knew how to edit audio. And a lot of the other people around me were all print majors and had never had that experience before. So I took over a lot of their podcast production and kind of had a moment where I said, you know what? I want to try something different and try something new. So I ended up at NBC Sports as a digital producer, helping them with their podcast network, but also got involved in a lot of their editorial partnerships. That's important as we get down the road, I promise. And one of the partners that I worked with was Yahoo Sports. So I got to know a lot of the staff over there, helped them with a lot of their video needs and kind of their more broad digital execution, I would say. So I started as a digital producer, ended up getting, I always say this because I do think it's important. I ended up getting promoted about 2.5 years in when I was there. I got promoted to manager of digital content or something to that effect, or senior editor, excuse me. And I always say I worked really hard, but I did have some luck in terms of the timing. And for women especially, I think it's really important to acknowledge that you didn't just get lucky. You had to work to get here. There might have been a little bit of luck that was a part of it, but you worked your way here, and that's why you got promoted. It wasn't just because, oh, they just picked you out of a hat. You worked your butt off, and that's how you ended up in that position to get promoted as well. So, was senior editor, worked there, ended up becoming senior manager of digital content, where I managed a team of 12, as well as our day-to-day relationship with the editorial staff at Yahoo Sports, and did a ton of things when I was there. I worked on, you name the sport, we did everything. Premier League, which is the European Soccer League, to NASCAR, to golf, to NFL, to worked on 4 different Olympics, to a Triple Crown, to the NHL Stanley Cup, which was just, all of those were amazing experiences. And the sports are all so different. And so I learned a little bit about everything, which was such a unique skill set to have as a real journalist there. In addition to that, I also managed a team of 12. So I got really good at giving communication and giving feedback to people and hopefully setting enough of a direction that was important. So as I said, I started with that editorial partnerships kind of day-to-day editorial relationship role. And the woman who used to run Yahoo Sports is a woman named Sarah Krennan. And she left about a couple years ago to join the NBA as our head of direct-to-consumer. And what ended up happening, and this is why I always talk about relationships and keeping those connections alive, is I saw an opportunity, thought that could be kind of cool, applied, and here we are. And it was one of those things that we were in the process of relaunching our app, which is now live and everybody should go download it for the record. But I in my interview process, I didn't know it was just a very vague, this is a new direct-to-consumer product that we will be launching, understandably. And so I was like, okay. And when I started to understand the scope of this, I said, I need to go do this because I'm never going to have this opportunity ever again. And so that's how I ended up at the NBA about a year and a half ago, leading content planning for the app, which basically means I have a massive draft board of content and I move things around depending on what's happening. So if we have a piece on Trae Young that's set to go out on Tuesday and he goes off and scores 55 on the Friday before, we'll publish it the Friday before. So it's a lot of reaction and adaptation, but then also making sure that we're planning where we think it might fit. So quick example, we have a partnership with Peloton. They are our official NBA fitness launch partner. So I work very closely with them. We did we called it the third quarter series, where it was an interview with one of their endorsers, Josh Hart. And so we ended up saying, okay, let's see what happens in game one. And if they win, and let's take a look at, we can put it out ahead of game two. And that's what we did. And Josh had a great game one and a great game two. So it ended up working out really well. And our fans were able to see that kind of when it was super relevant and when it was super topical. So those are some of the areas that I kind of focus on currently.
I love it. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And it sounds like a fantastic opportunity. And something you said that we really haven't talked about this much on the podcast, but really resonated with me was like the factor of luck in your career. Mm-hmm. But I totally agree with what you're saying. Like luck, I don't know if the word is luck, it's probably not, plays a part in every single fact, everyone's job, because you know the right role has to exist. Someone has to be leaving that job. They have to be hiring. They have to have the budget. So I think it's really interesting to think about it. Like every opportunity has like a teeny bit of luck.
It's really funny you say that because like the domino effect of things is remarkable. And to your point about the luck piece, I didn't mention my college internship process, but I was basically a finalist. I mentioned my roommate, Sarah Barshop. We were the two finalists for the Association of Women in Sports Media internship at ESPN our junior year. And like national finalists, like it's the two of us and we're roommates at Marquette University. And she gets it and I don't. And I'm elated and devastated all at the same time. And so is she. She's like, I'm so sorry. Like, and I go, no, like, I go, I need a week, but we're going to be fine. Like, okay. So...
That's perfect way to handle anything like that.
It was like, we just need a week. She's like, got it, no problem. What ended up happening is that it was a crazy situation. I said to the woman who was the hiring manager for the internship program overall, her name is Lindsay Jones. She's now at the Ringer. And I said to her, I go, hey, I said, if you hear of anybody, we were pretty late in the process. Go, if you hear of anybody who's looking for an intern, please let them know I'm around, I'm available. Don't hesitate to give them my resume. Well, fast forward, she did. And Melissa Geisler, who at the time was at Yahoo Sports, is now at Sports Illustrated, called me up and said, so we need a video intern. You want to come work at Yahoo Sports for the summer? And I said, sure. And that internship was how I got in with the editorial partnerships team when I worked at NBC. And then how I ended up meeting Sarah and ended up here. So completely agree. The luck piece and how it all kind of is meant to happen and stuff, whatever kind of right, higher power like, you believe in. And that can be whatever it is. It can be the wind. I don't know, but that is a real thing, at least in my career experience.
Absolutely. And there's no role in which it doesn't play. Just to have the job be available
just to even see the post,
right?
Like, or have somebody send you a post. Like it's so interesting how it all fits together.
Absolutely. I know. Totally. Totally. And one thing as you're talking that I think is so just interesting about your journey, and I'm not sure if you think about this, but I'm always thinking about this, like a lot of what you've done are kind of roles that didn't exist. And like, because of a little bit of experience, I mean, I have a similar experience where I worked in digital a million years ago, but when I went to 17, this is to make me sound old, but when I went to 17 Magazine to be the web editor, they were like, we've literally never talked to someone who has web experience, like, because it was so new, not because I was so special, right? Like, I was working at AOL in the teens. It was just like, no one had that. It would just didn't exist.
Right.
And to hear you talk about, like, oh, you had audio experience, you had this, and it kind of, the jobs were being created, and, you know, a lot, this is happening faster and faster these days, where it's like, you don't even know, the job you're going to have in 5 years doesn't exist, is what I often think about. And I really, that's fascinating to me that you just, it just makes me think in terms of it, to think of it in the perspective of career advice, it's like, always learning the skills is so important, because they're going to apply to something new in the future.
It's so crucial. And just to be, have the foundational pieces down, know how to write, know how to talk to people, know how to look at a budget. All those little things can add up into something so much more substantial. And speaking of budgets, I actually realized I did not mention this in my career journey because it's so new, which is I just finished my MBA from Boston University, which I probably should have mentioned.
Oh my gosh. I went to BU, so
it's go Terriers.
Special place in my heart, and God, this is the second episode in the row we're talking about BU. I promise I do not only bring in people on purpose that I want to talk about BU. Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. So yeah, please go ahead.
No, but I was going to say, but to your point about like career advice is always learn the other thing. It doesn't hurt to have an extra skill set. It doesn't hurt to have some sort of familiarity, even if you don't, if you're an associate producer in TV, and you have no desire to be an editor, you have no desire to do graphics, you just want to do features, make sure you know how to use a Chiron. Make sure you know how to use Photoshop, because you never know when that skill set's going to be needed by somebody either A, more senior than you, who doesn't have that experience, or B, be in a new position that you actually really want to do. And being prepared for that in those subtle ways is so, so key.
I'm really excited to hear that you got your MBA, because I think it's like hard to remind ourselves to keep learning, especially if we're doing the same job for a long time. And, you know, we're just having a lot of conversations here about the shifting media landscape. And I think this applies to it in terms of there's just so much to learn.
Well, having even a sense, like, I'm a content person through and through. That's what I came up in. That's what I wanted. But when I started to engage in more senior level conversations at various companies, I was a more junior person, and I would go like, I have no idea what they're talking about with this P&L. Like, what exactly does this go? How does this like fit together? And going back to business school was one of the reasons that I just was like, I need to learn how this stuff more broadly works so that I can go into a room and not feel like I'm behind. That was my big goal, is I just want to feel like I'm on par with the people who might have studied business and are having those negotiation type conversations.
Absolutely. I think it's a great skill to have.
Especially in media, it's like, you're a creative. You sometimes get pigeonholed into that. And I was like, I don't want to be pigeonholed into that. So that was why I really was like pushing that forward.
That's great. It's just becoming also less and less possible to not have those conversations. A lot of the media jobs are just, they're 360. You have to know about the business and the creative, where it just, and even in my career, I've seen that change. Like when I started, especially working in traditional magazines, it was like, you could really just be a journalist and not think about the business. And now it is not necessarily the case.
Like, I did have to tell my professors at a BU, I did formally have to tell them, I was like, I work at the NBA. I'm not just picking like random basketball things to write about. I go, for this assignment, this is really relevant for this specific project I'm working on. And they were very sweet. At one point, my professor said, did LeBron James like break some record? I was like, yep, he did. Oh. Like, we're just going to go with that and move on. Yes, he broke a record. That's cool.
They're like, this woman's obsessed with basketball.
I was like, I'm not writing about how pooling could apply to referee operations, which is not my area of expertise, by the way, in any sort of my job description, but was a hypothetical discussion for academic purposes. And literally was like, maybe we should pool some referee groups. Like I said, academic, hypothetical, don't know what's going to happen there. Not my expertise. But was like, yeah, this will be relevant. And so it was fun to do.
I love it. That's great. I want to hear a little bit more about your experience winning, receiving the New York Wiki scholarship. We've had many scholarship winners on this show, and it's such an amazing opportunity, and we're headed into Matrix season. So just a little bit about the actual experience and anything you learned, or you already kind of talked about, I mean, I think thinking about it just as recognition from the industry before you even enter the industry is so huge. But anything else that, or any other way that that helped shape your career?
It was one of the first times where I actually felt like there were other people like me in terms of that really wanted to dive in more deeply into this communication space and pursue it as an actual career. I had been friends with a lot of women who did high school TV and whatnot, and they were all like, this is great for now, but I don't want to do it moving forward. And to feel that sort of sisterhood was so crucial at that outset to, you know, as I mentioned, going 800 miles away to pursue this, like I was a pretty big deal. So my experience was amazing. I believe it's still the situation, but we were on the Today Show. We went to the Limited. They decked us out in all sorts of outfits and it was an amazing experience. And the Matrix list that first year was unbelievable. Like it was Katie Couric. It was Ina. It was, I think Mariska and Sheryl Crow were there that year. I think Oprah was my second year, but Oprah was there and Gayle King was there. It was just everybody who was anybody was there. And to be able to look at this massive group of people and to think to myself, oh my goodness, I'm in the same room as Oprah at like under 21, which was an insane accomplishment to have.
Ever.
And it was just like, what am I doing here?
That's all you're looking at. That's all of us want to do in our lives.
And she was actually wearing this like really pretty orange dress that looked fantastic on her. And I told her so, and she was like, she was not having a good like self-confidence day. I think she was like, I look like a pumpkin. I was like, no, you don't. I was like, Oprah, like, no, we're not doing that today.
That's a whole other lesson to learn. I'm like, even Oprah has her days. So, okay, we can talk about that.
Totally fair. But it was just so great. And I think it was really special as well for my parents. Who were just, I don't think I've ever seen my mom smile that much, and she smiles a lot. And they were over the moon. And I think that they still have the recording of the Today Show from a significant number of years ago. I'm not going to age myself that much, but I think they still have it somewhere. They actually might still have the program, to be completely honest.
I love that. That's so beautiful. And I'm so happy that you had that experience. And I always love to let our listeners know like what it's really like and that they should be applying.
Here's the thing. You 10,000% should apply. What's the worst that happens? They say, no, sorry. Maria Ungaro is very nice. If she's still doing scholarships, you'll be fine. She's a very nice lady. She'll be nice about it, I promise. But I do distinctly remember my board interview my first year, and I was really nervous. And I remember distinctly there was a question is like, well, why sports? Like what, like why does it bring the world together? And that's one of the things that, you know, as somebody who works in sports but cares about the world, it's like, okay, how am I really making a difference in the world? And I gave this like really interesting answer, at least I thought it was interesting, about how if you're a Cowboys fan, or if you're a Jets fan, or if you're a Liverpool fan, or if you're a Red Sox fan, it doesn't matter your age, your ethnicity, your gender, like you're one of us. And that sort of sense of camaraderie can be really important to people who are passionate about that specific team. And I think they were like, oh, huh, cool. And just kind of roll with it from there. Yeah, I was like, great, fine, thanks. Because I was really nervous. I remember being like, I think that answer made sense.
It's a beautiful answer. Sports bringing people together. I think it's I think it's a great answer. I would have given you the scholarship, but they did anyway. So what challenges have you had when navigating your career in sports communications? And have you found that being a woman in the industry has been an asset? Have you found it a hurdle to jump over? What has your experience been?
So my experience has been really different throughout the stages of it, I would say. Early on, it's a very different deal. You're trying to get used to working in a professional environment. Newsrooms can be a little tricky in that dynamic. And so how do you balance and figure that out? I would say the biggest asset as a part of that has been having other women in the room, because you no longer felt as much like an outsider. Kind of when I was growing up, it was very much like, oh, there's one woman, we're good. And that's not the situation anymore, which is huge. And now it's like, if you walk in the room and you are the only woman, you're like, what's this noise? No, like, this is weird. And, but that's where we are currently. We still have a long way to go, but we've gotten a heck of a lot better than what it was way back in the day. Couple of the challenges I've faced just generally have been, you know, being a woman in a leadership position, kind of some of the subtle underminings, the ideal stealing is what I'll say, is one thing that has happened in previous positions I've been in, where you say something in a meeting and you turn around and some dude is saying it is his idea and another. That's happened before. I'd also say, especially in sports, there's what I call the quiz, which happens a lot, which is people feel the need to quiz you on how much you know about your specific job or your specific sport. When in reality, if somebody said they're a history teacher, they would never ask them about the Revolutionary War. It just wouldn't. It wouldn't be a topic. They'd go, oh, cool, and move along. That's something that a lot of women in sports face, especially.
And but I think that's there's like a doubt that you're actually, that a woman would be the expert in that specific topic.
Yeah, this happened to me a lot, especially as I was very young in the industry. I think as time has gone on, that's reduced a little bit now, which is helpful. But yeah, every so often there's a, well, what do you know about X? And I'll answer the question and then I'll ask them normally something really inside baseball and, or inside basketball, excuse me. And they'll be like, I don't know what the other player from the LNB league in France is who got drafted. And I'll go, well, this is who it is. And him and Victor Wembanyama are good friends, you know, like, and then they're like, oh man, what are we doing here? But to answer your question very directly, I think that being a woman is a significant asset because of ways I think about things that are so different than maybe some of my male or non-binary counterparts. And I think that that's a crucial piece to have here. A really good example of that is how you watch a basketball game. So if you're watching a basketball game, or if you're watching a ski race, or if you're watching a Premier League club match that's happening, you watch the game very differently because you pick up different elements of what you're seeing on the field or on the court. So if I'm watching the Bucks play and all of a sudden I see Giannis's eyes jolt to the left and then jolt to the right, and then his footwork change, then I might be like, oh, he's going to go right here. But a lot of people that I know don't think about it that way, or they don't view the game that way. Or I'll also pick up on if a influencer or creator isn't feeling well when we're practicing with them. And I'll go, hey, like, I'll ask the question, like, how are you? Are you doing okay? And they may be like, you know, I'm not feeling great. I'll be like, all right, well, we can figure out maybe something else, or we can come talk back to you later. Those types of intuitive things, oftentimes some people don't see. And I think that's really a huge asset of being a woman and picking up on that intuition and leveraging that for your benefit.
I think that's fabulous. I mean, to even talk about it in that way of just the completely different sensibilities that women are bringing into the industry, and not just trying to, like, quote unquote, like, compete with men. Like, we're just doing different things, and collectively we're going to bring the whole set of skills. They're going to be different, which of course is true of, like, you know, any team, but particularly when it's evolving and more women are coming in, I think it's really interesting. Have you had mentors that have helped you? You've mentioned some fantastic women that have helped you along the way, but women and men who have helped you throughout your career?
So many. Just eons of people who have been, yes, I'll take your phone call. Yes, I'll read your email. Yes, I'll tell you when you're being a little too aggressive in a situation. And those are really specific instances, I would say. But just a couple of the names. I mean, Sarah Crennan's been incredible. She's my current boss. She's absolutely amazing. Kevin Monahan, who was at NBC for a very long time. I always say this, and there are several women I know in this industry who will say that they would not be where they were without Monahan's advocacy for them behind closed doors in rooms that we were not nearly like close to being in. He would talk about us and people, like there's three or four women who I know that are in senior leadership positions at different media companies because of his advocacy. So he's an amazing person. Eileen Sokol, who's still at NBC Sports, taught me so much about how to be an adult in this space, and also how to, and just how to run a business. She taught me so much about that and how to manage people. Gary Quinn might be the kindest soul in all of sports media, and he would go to battle for anybody. Rick Cordella, who's now the president of NBC Sports, was an amazing human. And just like he still is, he's just the most supportive person. Can't speak highly enough about that crew, as well as Mike Lowe and Katie McBee and Kara Baker, who were kind of there when I left. But, you know, at the NBA, there's been so many people that are, hey, come meet with me. You know, I was in an elevator with Byron Sorrell, who works on our on a variety of things. And I now meet with him regularly about different topics, content or non. And it's incredible to, you know, for context, he oversees a significant number of departments in the NBA, and he still makes time for those types of conversations, which is really special to see. I'm 1,000% forgetting about 85 people, but I have to make sure I mention two others, which are Malcolm Moran, who is now running the sports journalism program at IUPUI, as well as Doris Burke. Doris Burke has been in my life since I was about 5 years old. And even still to this day, when I see her, it's, how are you? What's going on? What are you working on? How can we help? Those types of questions that are just fundamental to people's career growth. I think those are some of the great examples, I would say, right off the bat. And I'm totally forgetting somebody, by the way. Like 1,000% I'm going to hang up this call and go, how could I have forgotten X?
We can put it in the show description.
Consider that my blanket apology for somebody that I completely forgot.
Your name wasn't mentioned. She means you. I agree with how you're talking about mentorship. It's all the people who have helped you along the way and been a part of your career. It doesn't need to be a formal mentor, although, you know, we have New York Women in Communications has a formal mentorship program that can also, of course, be so helpful. But what advice do you have for younger people who are looking to either formally work with mentors or just work with people, contact people, talk to people who are, you know, further along in their careers and may be helpful to them?
A couple of things quickly. First thing, don't cold email and ask me for a job. That's not going to work. That's great. If you want a job, cool. We can get there, but like, just don't email me cold and be like, can you help me get a job? No, not going to work. I would say the first thing is introduce yourself. Tell me why you want to talk with me. Do your research ahead of time. If you can't tell me one thing that I've done previously, and that doesn't mean just going to my LinkedIn page. This means Googling people. I know it's creepy. Do it anyway, because you're going to find so many different things that you might not know. So for example, if I get an email from a person that says, hey, I'm a Marquette alum. You know, I heard that, you know, you went to Marquette, da, 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 da. Okay, great. Now if I get an email from somebody that says, hey, I heard you worked on the Beijing Olympics and you were involved in this. I'm really interested in A, B, and C. If I'm facing those two, I'm more apt, even with the Marquette affiliation, which I feel very strongly about, I'm more apt to take the second one because it's been evident they've done their research. So once you've built the connection or you've made that connection, great. I know it can be really scary to cold email somebody. So investigate your network and see if somebody else knows them. Because if so, then it's a, hey, Julie, can you introduce me to Susie Q? And she might be able to help me. And then that way it's a different entry point. You have the conversation, you set up a meeting, great. You have to come prepared. You should not put the onus on the mentor to provide you with topics that they want to discuss. You should come prepared. Here's the topics that I want to talk to you about. Here's what I want to look at. Here's what I want to do. That's really important as the first outset of that conversation, because you want to show that person, I care about your time. I'm considerate of that. And here are the things that I would like to get out of this conversation. It level sets the playing field. The third element, kind of the third phase I would mention, is when you're trying to continue the relationship, have it be organic. One of the areas that people kind of get tripped up on is, how do I follow up? Follow up with something that you found interesting the other day. You saw an article that reminded them of you. You saw something on TV that you thought about. One of the other mentors that I did not mention and should have is Ian Eagle. I've known him since I was in middle school. I went to his sports broadcasting camp, which, no, I don't think Ian doesn't anymore, but Bruce Beck still does. And I just text Ian randomly when I see his son on TV. And I just say, hey, I saw Noah. He's doing great. I hope you're doing well. Like, there's no pressure. There's no expectation. But it's one of those things that it keeps you in somebody's orbit, so that when that job that you do want comes available, then they know how to reach you and get you in touch with that sort of thing. So those are kind of the three buckets of advice that I tend to give people regarding mentorship, because it can be a really challenging thing and you can't be scared of it. That's the other thing. People want to help you because people help them and they want to pass that along.
Great advice. That is like the most amazing, succinct, followable mentorship advice. I think it's great. And one thing that you said that I just can't emphasize enough is, like, when you're talking about texting someone, just kind of keeping in touch, is like, don't forget that it's all about relationships. I think a lot of times we use the word mentorship, networking, but really it's like thinking of it as a relationship. It's not just, let's talk to each other when we need something. We have a relationship. So when we do need something, that already exists and we can be in touch. So I really love that advice. It's fabulous. You mentioned the Olympics, and it is Olympics year. I want to just talk a little bit. In your past role, you were working in sports communications during the Olympics, and would love to hear about your experience. But I think something that was really fun that one of our producers wanted to ask is just to kind of tie that into, like, self-care and how to take care of yourself during an extremely busy time. That probably is one of the most busiest times, and an extremely busy time at work.
So first of all, I love podcast producer questions as somebody who used to be a podcast producer. So shout out podcast producer for that great tie-in. Well done.
We have a great team. Olympics... So thank you, team.
Thank you, team. The Olympics are an insane investment, from not only your time, but your energy, your effort. There is a reason. So for those of you that don't know this, the Olympics are counted by days. So it's day -4, day -2, day 0, day 1. And those are synced with, like, when the opening ceremony falls. So the opening ceremony would normally fall like day -2, day -1, because there is competition that happens ahead of the opening ceremony. And that's important because, in the lens of this question, because the Olympics get so crazy that they have to put on the walls at NBC, at least. No, actually in the International Broadcast Center as well, now that I think about this. What Olympic day it is, because you are working so many hours, you don't know what day it is. And it's an incredible experience. It's something I would not trade for the world, but it is a grind unlike anything I've ever experienced. So literally they write, it is, you know, August 3rd, day 12 of the Paris Olympics. That will be something that's written somewhere in many venues as well. I absolutely loved working in the Olympics. It was an insane time. It is incredibly gratifying between the storylines and the emotion and the goofy side jokes that you come up with your teammates when you're on hour 12 of your 13-hour shift and you have hit the loopy stage. All those things were incredible moments that I wouldn't trade for the world. And this is my first Olympics I won't be working. And in a very long time. So it's very strange to now be like, oh, I can just turn on primetime. This is weird. But we're going to make it work. And it is an incredible operation that NBC puts on and puts together. It is a behemoth of content. You learn a lot about a lot of random sports that you did not know before. I'll be completely candid about that. You learn a lot about kayaking and judo and different wrestling tiers and figure skating moves and gymnastics apparatus and you name it, you learn about it. So it's an incredible opportunity to just to be a part of. But in the self-care space, that's something that is a bit of a challenge and is crucial that you crystallize what you're going to do ahead of time. And I think if meditation had been a bigger thing, I would have done a lot more meditation during the Olympics, but it wasn't as much of a thing when I was doing them, or at least not that I had been participating in. I found that the two things that really helped me were having a strong bedtime routine where it was like, I would get home, I would, you know, take a shower, decompress, and I would either read a chapter of a book or I would pick a series and watch one episode of said series and then go to bed. And having that routine was really helpful. I mean, I did it in 2012 in London. I did it with The Newsroom, which was airing on HBO at the time. I was in London and still watched it. And to this day, anytime I think of the London Olympics, I think of The Newsroom. But, you know, I did it in Tokyo, I think, with the latest season of Virgin River. I should have done it in Pyeongchang with Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, but didn't realize that it was out at that point. So just having that routine is so important to like maintaining a little bit of balance during those 24 days.
Yeah, I was asking the question, I was like, it's going to have something to do with sleep. Like sleep is the only way to survive. And you probably don't have that many hours to sleep, but just like letting your body decompress.
Getting good night's sleep early will save you at day 17, for lack of a better term, because you have that baseline built in. One of the things that was really gratifying this year at All-Star was Gianmarco Tamburi, who is the Italian high jumper, ended up sharing the gold medal with his really good friend who he trained with because they both were tied and they were both like, can we just have two? And the guy was like, sure, that works. And so they both won the gold. It was an incredible story. And it was really cool because Gianmarco decided to play in the Ruffle Celebrity Game at our All-Star weekend this past year in Indianapolis. And so I got to talk with him about a bunch of different things because he was doing a training that our team was putting on. And I said to him, I said, you know, I worked on the Olympics and did all these things. And I said, I need you to understand, like, we understand what you were going through, but the people that were working on this, what that moment meant to a lot of us. And he was really, I don't think he expected that and was very touched by that kind of sentiment, which was really great to see and a really positive experience for me professionally as well.
I can't believe this, but our time is coming to an end.
This has been fun.
I could talk to you all day and would. Thank you for your time. I want to take a moment for you to share like the best piece of career advice that you've ever gotten. What's that you like to give? What's your favorite piece of career advice?
Always ask the question. What's the worst they're going to say? No? Fine. They say no. That is fundamental to how you push for different things in your life, as well as, you know, in the workplace. You're your biggest advocate. And if you can't ask the question, then you're doing yourself a disservice. So whether that's in a negotiation for a new job or in a promotion conversation, or I wanted to get a new project, you always have to ask the question. And if they say no, they say no. But that I think can be applied to so many different areas too.
That's a great piece of advice. Thank you so much for sharing it. And where can our listeners find you on social? Where do you like to connect with people?
I'm a big LinkedIn person, so definitely connect with me on there. You can also find me on Threads as well as X if you're still there. I'm at Tess Quinlan on most platforms, so feel free to connect with me on either of those.
Amazing. Well, this has been so much fun. I loved hearing about your journey. I loved hearing about your unique perspectives from your path through the sports world. And we really appreciate your time. So thank you so much, Tess.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Julie.
You've been listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochheiser-Ilkovich. Thank you to our incredible producer, Liz Roberts, and the amazing team that works on this podcast. Chelsea Orcutt, Chrisanne Grise, Mandy Carr, Alex Fetter, who wrote our original theme music, and all of the wonderful volunteers on the podcast committee. A special thank you to Donna Jean Plant and everyone at New York Wiki who supports us. For more information about New York Women in Communications, including how to join and all about upcoming events, go to nywiki.org. That's nywici.org. And please take a moment to rate and review our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.